We begin with a Shanti Mantra from the Upanishads. Om Apyayantu Mamangani Vak Pranaschakshu Shrotram Atavalam Indriyani Chasarvani Sarvam Brahmopanishadam Maham Brahma Nirakuryam Mama Brahma Nirakarot Anirakaranam Astu Anirakaranam Me Astu Tadatmani Nirateya Upanishatsu Dharmaste Mayisantu Te Mayisantu Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi. I pray to the Divine Lord that all aspects of my personality, body, mind, sense organs, the prana shakti, vital force and strength, may they all increase and function in perfect concert so that all my actions may be dedicated as offering to Him. This whole physical universe, visible through the sense organs, perceptible by the mind, is declared in the Upanishads to be nothing other than the ultimate reality described as Brahman in the Upanishads. May I not reject this truth? May I accept it as a starting position and strive in this life to make it my own experience. As I am engaged in that effort of experiencing my divine presence, may all the virtues described in the Upanishads, such as truthfulness, straightforwardness, strength and purity, come to me. May all those virtues come and reside in me. Om peace. May there be peace in our hearts. May there be peace and harmony amongst all beings. And may there be peace everywhere in nature. Good morning. Welcome to this another opportunity on this glorious day to continue our study of the topic, seeing God, seeing and serving God in all and everything. So far we have seen, by way of introduction, the traditional proofs, pramanas, called pramanas, to prove that there is a spiritual dimension to this universe, transcending and coexisting with the physical part visible, and traditionally six pramanas are used in the Indian philosophical systems. Some of them we saw earlier. And then there is also an additional pramana or evidence or proof that is very powerful, acts as a powerful motivation to begin our own quest for the divine, for this experience. And that is not counted as one of the traditional pramanas or proofs, but it is very useful and powerful. And that is apta vakya. Apta vakya or Shrestha vakya. That means the testimony of great sages and saints of all faiths who have themselves directly perceived and experienced the divine presence in all and everything. They have shared their experiences for the benefit of posterity, and that can serve as a motivation, as a starting point for our own quest. Then we saw the teachings of Sri Ramakrishna and other saints who, on the basis of their own direct personal experience, gave expression to their experiences. They were not all learned philosophers versed in the various philosophies, but they all spoke from the depth of their heart based on their own experience. Then the question arises, if that be so, as the opening prayer said, this whole universe is nothing other than Brahman described in the Upanishads. The Upanishads say, Sarvam Kalvidam Brahma, this whole universe is nothing but the reality, only that exists. If that be so, why are we not able to perceive the divine presence? At least some places, at least some people. What prevents us? What makes it difficult for us to see the divine presence in all, see everything as divine? All we see around is things qualified by the three gunas, sattva, rajas and tamas, good and bad, inseparably mixed. But we are not able to see the divinity, divine in all. There are several reasons for that, that those also we studied earlier. One reason is, it is not an object like a physical object that can be seen by the sense organs. It is pure consciousness, it is spirit, not matter. If it is matter, we can see. Our minds and sense organs are very good instruments when it comes to perceiving matter. Matter that has color, shape, form, size, dimension, properties, smell, etc. Those we can see. But this is pure spirit, pure spiritual truth, pure consciousness. Yet none of these qualities that can be perceived by the sense organs. That's one of the reasons. This is explained in the Upanishads and other scriptures. The second reason is, it lies with our own, is our own fault. We are most of the time preoccupied with outside things, with the external world, what is happening in this world, what's happening in our lives, that occupies most of our time, if not all of our time. Shankaracharya says there are three great distractions which prevent us from seeing God in all. Those three distractions we are familiar with. He calls them Lokanuvartanam, Dehanuvartanam and Shastranuvartanam. That means preoccupation with worldly pursuits. What's happening in this world? Who is doing what? All those things. People are interested in so many things. Television, internet, all those things. They occupy us. Gripping interest. That's how much of our time goes. And then much of our time goes in earning a livelihood. Job takes much of our time. And then family concerns, that consumes a great deal of time and energy. With all these things, where is the time? Or where is the inclination? We are so much absorbed, engrossed in these worldly pursuits. That is Lokanuvartanam. Second thing is, our preoccupation, endless preoccupation with our own bodies and requirements. What food to eat, what clothes to wear, what car to drive, what movie to see, all these things. Too much preoccupation. Life is becoming more and more complex with more and more gadgets being added every day that keep people engaged and occupied. And if there is any time left after these two, then some people spend a lot of time in scholarly pursuit of scholarly knowledge of the scriptures. Shankara calls this Shastranuvartanam. study of scriptures is necessary, is essential. Upanishad emphasize one has to study scriptures every day. Swadhyaya Parvachana. Swadhyaya Parvachana Abhyam Na Pramaditavyam. One should never refrain, Upanishad says, from the study of scriptures. That is essential. But then, there is a purpose why we should study scriptures. Scriptures are like recipe books or like road maps. They tell us what to do and how to proceed in our search for the divine. Once that information has been gathered, what we should do is to plunge into practice, put into practice those instructions which are given in the scriptures. If you simply read the scriptures, studying various commentaries and comparing on details of logic and grammar and everything endlessly, it's a waste of time. We have to put into practice what the scripture asks us to do. In the devotional aphorisms of Narada, which many of you studied here with the Swami Atmagyananji some time ago, Narada Bhakti Sutras, Narada Maharshi says one has to study scriptures. But then, one should put into practice what the scriptures ask us to do to enhance our devotion. He said, Bhakti Shastra Nimanani Yani Tadudbodhaka Karmani Karani Yani. If we don't put into practice what the scriptures ask us to do, then we'll become experts in the scriptures, scriptural study. We'll become great scholars. That brings worldly benefits, recognition, fame, reward, etc. But no liberation. That is another preoccupation. Then the third reason is, Sri Ramakrishna says, lack of intense yearning to see God. We are so passionate about achieving many things, doing many things, but that seems to be lacking when it comes to God realization or seeing God. It is there as one of the things to be done in life, but it's not the number one in the priority list that you want to do. So we have to reprioritize what we want to do and put this at the top of the list. I want to see God. When that intense yearning comes, it is like the rosy dawn that comes in the east early morning before sunrise. When you see the rosy color in the eastern sky, that means sun is going to rise very quickly. That yearning has to be strengthened. I want to do that. Days are going by. The number of days available is limited, is diminishing every day. As Shankara says, Pratyayamti gataha punarna divasaha kalo jagat bhakshakaha. One day gone is one day gone. It will never come back. One moment gone is one moment gone. So we have to be very particular about using our time wisely and devote as much time as possible for this purpose, to realize God, to see God. Those are the things that prevent us from seeing God. Then we were studying what is needed to be done, what is needed. We need the grace of God. Without grace of God, we cannot realize God. He has to bestow his grace upon us all. But how does grace come? We have to open our lives to his grace. Sri Ramakrishna illustrates this with an apt illustration. He says, grace is like the breeze always blowing. It's always there, available to everybody, unconditionally. But everybody may or may not benefit from that breeze. Especially if you are in a sailboat on a lake, if you keep the sails all rolled up, furled up, then you can't catch the breeze, you can't move forward. The sailboat does not move forward. We have to unfurl the sails, open the sails. Then the breeze makes the boat move. So God's grace is like the breeze available, but we have to open ourselves. Pray to God. practice purity, etc. Then breeze will blow, grace will be bestowed, it's always there, and we'll benefit from it. Swami Turiyananda, Sri Ramakrishna was one of the disciples, monastic disciples. In his letters, he wrote many letters. Those days, thank God, there was no email on telephone. So they used to write letters in handwriting. Some of them are preserved, fortunately. In one of his letters, in a couple of letters, not one, more than once, he has mentioned that if we take the first step towards God, God takes 10 steps towards us. He said he is writing this on his own, based on his own experience. Swami Turiyananda wrote on the basis of his own experience that if we take the first step towards God, God takes 10 steps or more towards us. But we have to take the first step. We have to show our interest. It is just like the child playing with the toys. Mother has given a lot of toys to the child to play with. As long as the child is busy playing with the toys, happy, the mother is watching. But if the child becomes tired of all the toys and then pushes them aside and cries for mother, then mother will come and take the child in her lap. This is the example that Sri Ramakrishna gave. We have to express our wish, our sincerity, our intense yearning to see God. That is our first step we have to take. If the child does not cry, mother is watching. No action is warranted. So that is we have to do. We have to seek God's grace. Intense yearning we have to develop, cultivate. And now the last topic we were discussing last time was the practice of detachment and purity of heart. Detachment is a topic which has come so many times in our earlier studies. No need to dwell on it in much detail. But briefly, we have to practice detachment from sensory pleasures in this world and hereafter, in this world's hereafter. Some people do various kinds of special pujas and ceremonies to go to heaven, to seek a place in heaven. Enjoyment here, plus heavenly enjoyment in after death also. For that, special prayers are made. That is all limited. Heavenly enjoyment is as limited as earthly enjoyment, and it is going to end sooner or later. It is a time limit. As Sri Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Kshine Punye Martyalokam Vishanti. How do we go to heaven? By doing certain kamya karmas, good deeds. Then we earn a place there. For how long? As long as the stock of our punya, our merit, lasts. Once the stock of our merit is exhausted, then we all come back to this world, our world of human beings. It's only from the human platform, from the platform of human life, that we can strive for liberation, for spiritual illumination, not from any other world. So seeking heavenly enjoyment and pleasures in this comfort in this life, they're all limited objectives. Very graphically, Sri Krishna has described the limitations of worldly enjoyment, too much attachment to these things in the Bhagavad Gita. All these things are conditional. The happiness that we get from the world, from various things, they are highly conditional, subject to change at any moment. We seek happiness through possessions, acquiring a lot of property and money, with the contention that if we have a lot of money, that makes us happy. More money means more happiness, which is not true. But that's what some people believe. So much time is left, is spent in acquiring wealth, only to realize that one day separation will come. All the wealth is intact, I have to leave, or I'll be there and wealth will leave. Something or other happens. One way or other, separation comes, and then only unhappiness prevails. Adyantavantaha, they all have a beginning and an end. Mateshwaramate buddhaha. a wise person, an intelligent person, does not depend upon these things for happiness. So we have to cultivate a sense of inward detachment. Physically, we don't have to give up things. We need things. These are necessities. We need to keep those things. We don't have to all have to leave our homes and jobs and families and run away to the forest as some people used to do in the earlier times. Kings used to give up their kingdom, entrust the responsibility of their kingdom to the oldest prince, son, and king and his queen used to repair to the forest to seek God. Vanaprasthashrama they used to accept. And many people used to do that one. We have heard the story of Yajnavalkya and Maitreyi in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad, who went to the forest to seek knowledge of God, Brahman. That's not necessary. For this age, it is not necessary to physically give up all the things. We can keep the house, we can keep the money, we can keep the children, we can keep the family, job, everything. At the same time, Sri Ramakrishna says, cultivate inward detachment. Inwardly in your mind, we should say, all these things are here now. Sooner or later, separation will come. They will all be here and I have to leave. Or I'll be here and they will leave one by one or all together. One way or another, separation will come. I will not depend upon them for happiness. When they are available to me, I will be thankful. I'll accept them and make good use of them. All resources, money and everything. But when they leave, I know that was going to happen. There is no dependence. So when the loss occurs, which inevitably it should, then we are not unhappy. We are used to that. Inwardly we are detached. That's what Sri Ramakrishna says. For most people, inward detachment is necessary. That has to be done. Detachment in regard to sensory pleasures. How long can we enjoy? You know, in story of Nachiketa in the Kathopanishad, Yama offered so many things to Nachiketa, the young boy who was seeking knowledge of the self. Yama says to him, I'll give you a large kingdom, I'll make you an emperor, you will have queen, and you will have all the facilities, lot of money, big treasury, horses and chariots and elephants, and dance and music, everything I will give. Please take all these things. Don't worry about death, because you are still very young. There's a lot of time before you don't want to think about death. But Nachiketa said no. Any ordinary person would have grabbed them and gone away with great glee, but not Nachiketa. He was made of different stuff. He says to Yama, sir, little boy, imagine telling to Yama, god of death, on his face, sir, please keep all the horses and chariots for yourself. Tavaiva vahas tavunritya gita. Can you imagine that? The courage and the discrimination of this little boy. He says to Yama on his face, you keep your horses and chariots. Tavaiva vahas tavunritya gita. He says, no, I want knowledge of the self. That's the only thing that's worthwhile striving for. Not the worldly pleasure. Give to those who are seeking these things. He says, why he does not want? He gives several reasons. Nachiketa gives several reasons why these things are not to be depended upon, not to be counted upon for happiness. If they are there, well and good, thanks. If they are not there, okay, fine too. Nachiketa says, navittena tarpaniyo manushyah. A human being, ordinary human being, can never be satisfied no matter how much money you give him. If you have $1 million, a person who is a millionaire, he wants to become a billionaire. If he's a billionaire, he wants to become a multi-billionaire. Somebody has, Bill Gates has 94 billion, so I want to have more than that one. It will never cease. It never ceases. It drags from birth to death, as Swamiji says in the Song of Sinyasim. Inwardly, we should say, how much money do we need for a decent life? Quite some time ago, there was a Sunday talk here. I spoke on one of the short stories of Tolstoy. Tolstoy wrote many short stories, and one of them has stuck in my mind. It was in my high school textbook. about 70 years ago. And that one story only I remember from my high school days. The title of the story is How Much Land a Man Needs. The story of greed, how greed can lead to death. Very moving story. So we have to control these things. Greed for possession has to be controlled. In the 16th chapter of the Gita, Bhagavan Sri Krishna says there are three wide gateways to hell. Trividam narakasyedam dwaram nashanam atmanaha. The three big gateways. The gateway to heaven is narrow and straight. Gateway to hell, many and wide. What are they? Lust, greed, and anger. Kamaha, krodaha, tatha, lobaha. Lust, anger, and greed. Other things, but these are the major enemies. We have to control them. Tasmad etatrayam tajet. Therefore, we have to conquer, control these three impulses. Lust, uncontrolled lust. Unregulated, adharmic, unrighteous lust should be controlled. Desire is not totally prohibited. In the earlier ancient rishis, they said four goals of life are there, purusharthas. Kama is one of them. Kama means desire. But there has to be some regulation. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says, all desires are not necessarily bad. In the highest sense, they are. Any desire is a limitation. But ordinarily, there are certain desires which may be pursued without much harm. Dharmic desires. In the Gita, Sri Krishna says one very nice criterion which helps us to distinguish between dharmic desires, virtuous, which can be pursued to some extent. And if some desire is not righteous, does not lead to happiness in the short run or long run, that should be given up. If you fulfill some desire, if it brings me happiness, good. What happens to other people? If I fulfill my desire, in that process I may be causing discomfort to some other people, animals and plants. We should be cognizant of that, aware of that one. So all those things we studied earlier. So desires, lust, anger is very bad. The greatest enemy is anger. In the newspaper and TV news media, every day news is full of crime news. All kinds of bad things are being done, are happening. If you analyze the motivation, reason why those people do those bad things, it all comes down to only two things, two or three of these things. Desire, anger, and greed. All crime can be traced to one or more of these three things, combination of these three things. Lust, anger, and greed. Those things we have to work on those things. Detachment. Too much attachment to sense objects, possessions, enjoyment, etc. should be controlled. In the conversation between the great sage Janaka, who was an emperor and also Jnani, Brahma Jnani, knower of the self, and the great sage Ashtavakra, there is this verse. Many of you studied this book, Ashtavakra Samhita, with Swami Atmajnananda ji some time ago. This Ashtavakra Samhita is a great book. It's a small book, not as big as Viveka Chudamani. This conversation between two great jnanis. Both of them were Brahma jnanis. Janaka was a Brahma jnani, knower of the self, and so was Ashtavakra, the sage. There, Ashtavakra says, Mukti michyasi cetata vishayan vishavatyaja. If you desire liberation, muktimichasi chet, oh dear Janaka, if you desire liberation, first thing you have to do, Ashtarakra says to Janaka, Vishayon Vishavatyaja, give up all attachment to sense objects, sensory pleasures. Because they may be very pleasing in the beginning, bring a lot of pleasure, but in the end, they will cause only disillusionment and also lot of misery it brings. Too much attachment to sensory pleasure should be given up. So Ashtavakra says to Janaka, this is the first instruction that Ashtavakra gives to Janaka. The very first verse in the first chapter of Ashtavakra Samhita was Janaka's question about liberation, self-knowledge. And the moment Ashtavakra begins to give his teachings, the first verse he says, second verse, first chapter, if you wish to have liberation, knowledge of the self, first thing you have to do is to give up attachment to all sense objects, sensory pleasures. Mukti michyasi chetata vishayan vishavatyaja. And then he gives other disciplines, spiritual practices to be done. This book is very interesting. Sri Ramakrishna made Swami Vivekananda study this Ashtavakra Samhita in behind closed doors. He did not talk about Ashtavakra Samhita to other of his monastic disciples, only to Swami Vivekananda, behind closed doors. It's a very nice book, but difficult to follow in practice, that I have to admit. Then detachment from work and its results. We do some work, we put the I in it, where it really need not or should not belong. Then we are attached to the karma phala, the fruits of our work. I have done this, I must get this benefit. That has to be given up. That also we studied in some detail earlier. How we become attached to karma, karma phala, work and its results, and how we can practice detachment from work and its results. All this information has come from the Bhagavad Gita. Sri Krishna deals with karma in much detail, karma yoga in much detail. There he says, whenever you do some work, on several occasions, Sri Krishna says, whenever you do some work, offer it to me, dedicate it to me. If you give something away to somebody, give it something to somebody, then it's not yours anymore. What that person does with it is his concern. Then you are free, you are given it up. Like that, whatever work we do, we say, I'm offering it to God. Then what he does with it is up to him. Whatever result he gives, I'll accept it with equanimity, whether I like it or not. That is the spirit of karma yoga that Sri Krishna emphasizes in the Bhagavad Gita. Many places in the Gita, Sri Krishna says, try to remain equanimous in success and failure. Siddhya siddhyo samabhutva samatvam yoga uchyate. That is how to practice. Several things are given in the Gita. We have studied that. There was one Sunday talk here some time ago. The title of the talk was, Who is the Doer? Karta kaun hai? Who is the Doer? There we studied all the various options that Bhagavan Sri Krishna gives in the Bhagavad Gita and how to practice detachment from work and its results. That one, second one. The third thing is detachment in regard to relationships. We depend heavily for our happiness on relationships. Happiness coming from other people, spouse, children, friends, other people. But we know from experience that this is not dependable. It has to work both ways. If I love somebody, that other person also must love me. Otherwise, there is no happiness. One person says, I love you, the other person simply keeps silent, then there is no love. That person, I love you too. We should see. Immediately it should come. Response must come. Otherwise, one person, one-sided, that won't work. So it's all with the happiness that comes from relationships is entirely conditional, depends upon how the other person reacts. And that reaction may change. Today somebody may love, some two people may love each other, and tomorrow, after some time, they may be seeking separation. What changes? Same two people. One day they said, I love you, I love you. Then the next day they say, I hate you, I don't want you in my life. So what happened? This is the undependable nature of this kind of happiness. So we have to practice detachment there also. Sri Ramakrishna has given instruction on how to practice detachment in relationships. You can say, my Rama, my Hari, my child, my husband, my wife, my children. You can say that. But you know, in your heart you should know that really nothing is yours. One thing that we have to do is to ask ourselves periodically, what is really mine? We always say, this is my thing. This is my house, my property, my child, my job, my money, my body. We keep on saying everything as mine. But if you pause and think, what is really mine? It's very useful to reflect on that one. We find out, much to our discomfiture, that really there is nothing is. Nothing is what I can call mine. The nothing that I can call mine. Not even my body, to which I am so much attached, my body. Whose body it is? How much control do we have? No control. It comes, it goes. So there is really nothing that can be called truly mine. So we have to do this kind of vichara, inquiry. So we can say, for ordinary conversation purposes, my house, my boy, my child, my daughter, my son, my wife, my husband, my job, my money, everything. But we should know, really not mine. They may all be there today. Tomorrow they may leave, one by one, all of them together. Or they may all be there intact and I may have to leave. You can't count on that one. So he gave several examples. One example that comes to my mind is, you can say in your mind, my house, my job, etc. But really, you're not the owner. The house is in your name. You're the parent of your child. Job, you're doing the job, you're the worker in a company or business or government or academic or whatever. But we should be able to say, this only is a temporary association between me and that object, person or job or money or whatever. It's a temporary association. It may end any time. But in the meantime, I have to take good care of these things. I have a job, I have to do it very well, sincerely. I have a child, I have to take care of it very nicely, as well as I can, provide good education, values, etc. I have a house, I have to maintain it very well. I have my relatives, wife or husband, I have to take care of that person very nicely, lovingly. But we should think in our minds that I am only a caretaker, I am only a babysitter, I am only a house sitter, I am a manager, I am a servant, I am a caretaker. Temporarily, these things are in my name. As long as they are with me, I will take very good care of these things, sincerely. But time will come, when separation will come, then I have done my part. I should be able to face that separation, which is inevitable, with great sense of relief, if not relief, joy and gratitude. I have done my part. As long as it was with me, I did my part to the best of my ability. That person or property or house or job or whatever, now that it is separated, it's okay. Rama gave, Rama took. That attitude of inward detachment we should have. If you expect happiness from them on a long-term basis, it may or may not work. In the Chandi, which many people chant, in the Devi Mahatmyam, also called Chandi, Durga Saptashati, it has three names. There's a story of this, a king and a businessman. The king had a kingdom, and the name of the king was Suratha. And enemies occupied his kingdom, defeated him, and he had to escape to the forest at night just to save his own life. He had to leave behind the whole kingdom, palace, treasury, children, wife, queen, everything. And he was wandering in the forest aimlessly, having lost his kingdom and everything. When he was wandering like that in the forest, he comes across another person who was also seemed to be very unhappy. Then they ask each other, "What is your problem?" The other man says, "I was a businessman. I was a big businessman. And my partners cheated me. And my customers went to some other business. And I became homeless. And no place to stay. Even my wife and children also became distant from me. Because I lost all my property and money. So I ended up in the forest, no place to stay. Two homeless people, one lost his kingdom, one lost his business. They were commiserating, explaining their mutual miseries. When they were doing this, they came across a hermitage where a sage was living with his disciples. Medhas was the sage's name. And they approached the sage. And the sage asks them, "What is your problem?" Each of them explains his problem, how he ended up in the forest without anything, having lost everything. Then the sage gives advice, and the story is very long. To cut it short, they worship the Divine Mother, and the king gets his kingdom back, and the businessman did not want his business back. He wanted self-knowledge. He was granted self-knowledge. Among the many things that the sage said to the king and the businessman, he says, "There is no such thing as unselfish love. It's very rare. It is there, but very rare, extremely rare. People say, 'I love you,' but there's always a selfish reason behind that love. This relationship gives them happiness. That's why they want to stay in the relationship." This is explained in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. Yajnavalkya says to his wife Maitreyi, "People love each other. They say, 'I love you,' 'I love you,' to each other. Why? Because they find happiness in the relationship. If I don't find happiness in this relationship, then I don't want that relationship. My desire to continue in that relationship depends upon how much happiness I get from that relationship. If make the other person happy, but if it does not give me happiness, then I don't want that relationship." So there is a selfish element in our love also. When people say, "I love you," then you should take it a little bit grain of salt. There is a hidden element of selfishness. Most of the time, I won't say all the time, there are cases of unselfish love. So the sage says to the king in the forest hermitage, "Manusha manajavyagra sabilasha sutan prati lobhat pratyapakaraya nanvetan kim na pashyasi." "O king, you said you were deserted. Your kingdom you lost, your enemies snatched away your kingdom. Even your wife and children also became distant from you because you had nothing. There is all this love that people profess. There's almost always, there is an hidden element of selfishness there. This relationship brings me happiness. That's why I cherish this relationship. If there's no happiness for me in that relationship, then I don't want that relationship." This nicely explained by the great sage Yajnavalkya in the Brihadaranyaka Upanishad. There Yajnavalkya says to his wife Maitreyi, says, it's a very long passage, 16 lines are there. There he says, when a husband says to his wife, "I love you, my dear," or when a wife says to her husband, "I love you," or children say to parents, children, etc., other people say, there's always a hidden element of selfishness in it. Extremely rare, extremely rare to come across totally unselfish, pure love. It is there, but very rare. So we cannot depend upon these things. Thinking in this way, we have to practice detachment. As long as I'm in this relationship, whether my child or my husband or wife or parent or co-worker, whatever, I do my best, serve this person nicely as well as I can. Sri Ramakrishna says, treat them all as children of God. that God has sent you in your life to enrich your life, to play a part in your life. Welcome them into your life in whatever capacity they happen to come into your life. Do your best, and then when the relationship ends, you are done your part, you are relieved. That is how to practice detachment in regard to possessions, property, name and fame, etc. They are all temporary. In regard to work and its results, in regard to relationships. That is the requirement to clear our mind. If the mind will become free from detachment, then vision of God becomes imminent. We stop here today.